As Margaret Mead said, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. At Red Compass Labs, we believe in the power of data and expertise to fight the most heinous crimes, such as human trafficking and child sexual exploitation. In this podcast series, we talk about financial crime with people who care and want to make a difference. I'm Jonathan Bell, and this is A Few Thoughtful People by Red Compass Labs.
Welcome, everybody, to today's podcast recording from our A Few Thoughtful People series. I'm Jonathan Bell. I'm the President and Head of Client Relationships at Red Compass Labs. We're a company that specializes in all things payments, payments good, payments bad. And we're here to talk a bit about today how the banks can actually detect and then turn that around to preventing the various money flows associated with different forms of human trafficking. You know, we often say every payment tells a story. And in this corner of financial crime, the stories are typically very sad ones, actually involving real people facing real hardship. So I'm delighted to say today that I'm joined by three gentlemen from the United States of America who've been helping us of late with some tremendous work in this space. So I'm pleased to introduce Rick Hamilton, who is the head of AML Data Science Solutions at PNC Bank in Pittsburgh. Thank you, Rick, for joining. Rick's colleague and friend, Stephen Zinger, is also with PNC Bank. He's the manager of the Risk and Targeting Group and very much involved with helping to apply these models in reality. We've got one of the larger banks in the US with us. And then Aideen from South Story Bank and Trust, a slightly smaller bank in the US, has some real life examples of how to put some of this detection capability into action. So Aideen is the BSA Financial Intelligence Officer at South Story Bank. I'll actually be talking a little bit about a case study from a previous role. So thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today. Appreciate your time. It's great to talk to you again on this podcast. Thank you very much. Let me just set the scene very quickly as to what we're talking about here. So how does a bank go about detecting human trafficking in its various forms inside the bank's data? Well, it's a combination of things. At Red Compass Labs, we've developed what we call Red Flag Accelerator, which we think is the leading set of information to help the banks understand what these different human trafficking crimes look like as they interface and as they run through the banking systems. So what we've done is we've pulled together information from outside the bank, looking at real life cases from a law enforcement perspective, a regulator perspective, NGOs perspective, and work with the banks to generate a set of typologies, a set of behaviors with a set of associated flags woven together in persona-based scenarios, that if these things fire together in combination, then you know you've found traces of human trafficking. And we're all about sharing that information with the banks. But the reality is sharing a load of information with the banks is one step. But what we want to do is enable the banks to be able to put some of this into practice and move from understanding the what, now that we know what we're looking for, how do we automate some of that detection and go find this? And this is what we're going to talk about today with Rick, with Stephen, with Aideen. So I'm delighted to be able to join. Thank you very much again. If I could hand the floor for a few moments to Rick. You've got some experience in this space, you know, financial crime and how it's managed in PNC Bank through your career. How do you see the challenges here and what we can do about closing some of these gaps?
Well, thank you, Jonathan. I appreciate the opportunity to share some experience on this. I think if you think about the challenges that banks face, we have constantly shifting bad actors. They're very, very quick at changing their typologies, making it challenging for bankers and other financial intermediaries to keep track of their patterns. As much as we'd all like to be experts in everything, we have limited expertise, at least limited expertise in each bank. We have some banks that have a great deal of expertise in some areas, but it's rare, perhaps outside of the very large banks, to have experts in all of the different criminal domains, which is helpful in designing better scenarios. And we have rapidly evolving technology. It feels sometimes like it's moving faster than any of us can keep up with, particularly with
the advent of things
like generative AI. So, you know, how do banks typically adapt to this? Well, or, you know, react to this? Well, we have to adapt. We have to figure out how we're going to keep our scenarios and models aligned with the changes in both good customer behavior and bad actor behaviors. One of the ways we have to do this, I believe, is through collaboration. We kind of find more ways to collaborate and share expertise between banks. We don't compete in the AML space. This is something we all have a commitment to helping to eradicate or, you know, expunge from our financial institutions. Clearly, there's a mandate from the U.S. government to do so as well. So I think collaboration is something which is key. And the type of work that Red Compass brought forward is an example of that type of collaboration. And then I believe experimentation is also vital. We do need to figure out if new technologies will work, how they will work, and, you know, when it's appropriate to apply them. Everything we do is on a risk-based approach. So you have to adapt our technology in a way that's safe and sound for our institutions, while at the same time trying to keep up with, if not get ahead of, some of these bad actors.
Yeah, because they're not strangers to innovating, are they? They certainly adapt and, you know, keep on moving. And for us to keep up with them, we've got to respond, right? It's changing game. Yeah, thanks, Rick. Collaboration is absolutely key, and that's what we're keen to foster. So Rick's perspective from one of the larger banks in the US. Dean, what's your perspective and how it looks from your side? So it's some different challenges, a different customer base, maybe to some extent. What's your thought on how to address some of these problems?
Yeah, our approach is a little bit different because we're a small community bank. Therefore, we don't have as many of the resources, I would say, as maybe the larger banks from my experience. But, you know, we really look at our frontline staff. How can we train our frontline staff to detect some of these examples of human trafficking and just suspicious activity in general? You know, they might not be prone to have access to some of these softwares and data analytics and stuff. So we really need to focus on our frontline staff. That's kind of 90% of my intake of alerts outside of our software comes from our frontline tellers and bankers. They're the ones that are working with these customers sometimes on a daily basis. So it's a little bit different, and we change our approach and how we train and detect and identify.
That's a really interesting distinction, isn't it? That for all banks, it's about customer interaction, of course. But with a bigger bank like PNC, there's an awful lot of data and information that can be looked at and monitored and reviewed to understand what's happening. But in a smaller bank, maybe there's a little bit less data. And lots of these are triggered by what people are seeing in the branch, right? So that human interaction and people spotting it with their eyes is a very much an important part of this process, right?
Absolutely. And I would add, you know, we have the ability to work one-on-one with our staff as opposed to maybe a bigger bank will not have the time to invest and talk just because they're on a much bigger scale, different markets, so on and so forth. So that's what we use to leverage and gain that knowledge from our staff.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. So from a bigger bank perspective, from Rex of PNC to a smaller bank perspective, Dean's experience and viewpoint's really useful. We're going to focus the conversation a little bit now on a commercial front brothel use case, which is what we've all been looking at and working on together. It's one of many different slices of the human trafficking suite of problems that there are. But that's part of the power, I think, of these models. If you understand what specific persona-based crimes look like, then you can apply that to your systems, to your processes, to your people, so they know what they're looking for. So when this washes across their desk, whether in reality, physically or metaphorically through the data, they know what they're looking at. So let me just explain very briefly what we mean by a commercial front brothel. So essentially, sex trafficking is what's going on here, but it's masked behind the facade of a genuine, legitimate business, whether that's a bakery or a hotel or something. But behind that front, actually, you've got it's running as a brothel. So people are trapped in slavery in these services. There's a network behind that of people, and there's money movements that are associated with that. So it does leave a financial footprint, and you can see those behaviors in the data. So what we've been working on in Red Compass Labs is, how do you spot that? So how do you investigate it? So there's a few steps to this. Firstly, to know what to look for, and that's where our library of information and the typologies comes into bear. And then you've got to go look for that in the data, bring that data set together, trim down the noise and focus on things of high value. And when you've found some key things to go look at, then you turn the handle on the investigation. This is a process, technology, and it's involving people to run that through the chain, generate those risk scores and go investigate. So we're looking for evidence of sex trafficking hidden behind the facade, a front of a genuine business. So I'm going to come on to Stephen here. So we're doing a little bit of work together. Can you just talk us through a little bit how you see it and what you've been doing in this space to try to lift the rock and understand what we're looking at and find some of this?
Yeah. So as the name of my group would imply, I like to think of it as starting or back engineering from what our target is. So my group's name is the Risk Targeting Group. So we're looking at what exactly are we targeting, which fits in perfectly with Red Compass's persona-based features or red flags that we can look at for human trafficking. So if you have a focus on what you're trying to capture, it helps you define exactly what you're needing. And PNC, there's been many attempts and we're working through the best way to identify human trafficking and specifically the commercial front brothels or illicit massage. And I am convinced that we're not going to make a meaningful impact in this problem unless we start utilizing third-party data from other sources that may be aggregating different elements and then using that to target with the persona-based features to kind of hone in a little bit further. Features such as cash and odd hours. So you have a business that really shouldn't be dealing in cash between, say, 11 p.m. and 6 a.m., or for that matter, individuals. And then as you start building down these various features, you can start targeting closer to the area you're looking for. And then maybe even start applying some graph techniques to find networks that maybe weren't apparent in your data or customer base. I still find it very important, even though a larger financial institution is what I like to say, a few steps away from the front line, just because of the larger organization structure, we still can utilize our frontline staff to best identify potential other kind of elements that wouldn't be transactional based. So I still think that plays an important part of frontline training and making sure the staff knows that if something's unusual, they can identify it. But I think there's got to be, from a larger institution, a proactive approach to making sure that we're trying to be less reactive and eventually maybe more proactive in these cases.
Right, exactly. Yeah, good point. A question for you, Stephen, on that. So yes, absolutely, I agree with you. There's input from the frontline staff. There's being proactive about looking into the data that the bank has. How do you fuse together information that's inside the bank naturally in terms of onboarding data, KYC, and transaction data that you'll see part of being the bank with some of the data that you can get from outside the bank, some of this fusion of the data together with the understanding of what you're looking for in the typologies? How does that work?
Yeah, so I think it's important to remember it's sometimes when we start in this data field, we look at numbers and characteristics of transactions that there's a human walking into a branch or a location and opening an account. So when you take that into account, of course, you have to have feedback to the frontline staff to make sure the accurate information is being collected upon onboarding. And then we need to understand what we have in that data field. And then comparing that to the external data, we have to make sure we, you know, clean the sources from external third-party data, make sure we understand exactly what it means to have this data, and then pair it up things such as phone numbers, email addresses, physical addresses, maybe even names to your customer information, and do your best to try to work through combining those data pieces together so you have the elements that are important to identify this activity.
Right, exactly. So some of those key elements, those identifiers, whether it's phone numbers, email addresses, and so on, if you can tie some of those together with what you found in the outside the bank with what you've got inside the bank, you've got something to hang your hat on, right? You've got a hook to start with. Those are some of the key triggers that if you find the right ones of those, then you know you're onto something, and then you can start to turn the handle with that investigation. Right. So in your case, Stephen, you've got a great and sizable team of experts who can do some of this data analytics and looking for this in the data. And it's exciting to see this emerging, I guess, more and more in this particular space on top of the other crime types that you already addressed very well. Nadine, in your case, though, you had a different setup, didn't you? So talk us a little bit about how you took some of this information and applied it into your context and what happened there. And I guess, for me, this really helps bring it to life. And to your point, Stephen, this is real people that we're talking about. It's not just numbers, not just bits and bytes. So Nadine, just share with us a little bit. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. The new methodology or the typology that are provided, we did a twofold approach on it. We took all the frontline specific red flags with human trafficking and sex trafficking and identifying some of those. And we looked at, you know, what can our staff look at at the front line. And then that twofold piece is we looked at some of the alerts and pieces that we can take a look at and review our BSA vendor and see, you know, what are they looking for? How can we marry those up together? And I look at it as data versus situational awareness, right? You can have all the data in the world, but if you're not seeing it at the front line, how do you apply that? How do you look for those things? So that's kind of the approach that we took in this. And we configured and we worked with our vendor to better understand some of the things that the data is in there looking for. And then the frontline staff was, you know, able to connect, all right, this is an unusual activity. This person's coming in at weird hours, that, you know, a change in behavior, change in the vehicle that they're coming in, things to that effect. So that's kind of how we applied some of these typologies that are provided by Red Compass.
Yeah, great. I mean, it's a great story, right? And taking it and applying it. I'm going to ask you to elaborate on what happened in a second. But Beth, just back to you briefly. Oh, I was going to go Rick or Stephen. Oh, I'm going to ask Rick. I'm going to go back to Rick. You've had a few minutes of quiet. We often talk, certainly in Red Compass Labs and with others, about wanting to change the game a little bit here. I mean, this collaboration, absolutely, you're right. This is not a competition. This is doing the right thing. So this collaboration is key. But also changing the way we manage risk in this space is something that, you know, looking at from the broad sweep of let's try and catch all transactions that go through, look at them somewhat independently and try and catch them, to a more data science-based approach of understand them better and focus on the things with greater understanding. And that takes some of the fusion of this information together, doesn't it?
Yeah, I would totally agree. I think traditional rules-based systems have a nice attribute, which is, you know, they're intuitive, but they can also be very inefficient. The kind of system that you've introduced here it lends itself both to application and rules-based and to application and machine learning, depending upon how much data individuals banks have to develop their own types of tools. So I think it's a very powerful attribute to have when you can take third-party data, which gets you into the neighborhood, if you can find entities in your bank that are associated with that third-party data, gets you into the right neighborhood of where that activity of concern is taking place. And then you can apply rules on top of that, which can come in the form of machine learning features or an expert rule system, which help you to tailor down that initial list of customers to the ones that you actually have more concern about. And the ability to, you know, keep in sync with changes in those rules, which are effectively just ways of quantifying customer behavior, allows us to keep tabs on or keep up with the changing behaviors of bad actors. Right. It's a powerful tool.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. I think we're really starting to see that. Stephen, just to bring you back in for a moment. So in terms of, you've been doing some of the work to help dig into this, and you've been finding certain things. What have you been sort of finding in the data that's been of interest to you? I know there's work ongoing and so on, but any examples that you're able to share? Of course, we're not going to share anything sensitive on this, but any thoughts?
Yeah, so we've had some success with matching external data to our internal customers, and I'd be kidding myself if I wasn't surprised by that. And so I'm also identifying some opportunities that as we start getting closer to our actual target and to the point where we would have events created to be reviewed by our special investigations unit, you know, making sure we're having those conversations is saying, okay, is this, you know, I consider them the experts in our fields here. Is this what you're looking for? And then really kind of presenting some of these results. You know, we've been able to identify some instances of individuals that are clearly, at the very least, self-proprietors, if you would, in this illicit area, and are probably on the edge or risk with some apparent or very clear indicators that we see of normal red flags you would see. So we are honing in closer on these targets and getting very close to finding it.
Yeah, fantastic. Exciting stuff. Thank you. So Aideen, just going to come back to you then. So just elaborate for us about what happened, what you found.
Sure. Yeah. So our case study, and I'll start with saying that we were very lucky with some of the things that we identified, because it's not always this easy. You know, it's very hard to identify. But initially, we were notified by a phone number change in our customer's behavior. So when you look at that initially, it's not a huge deal, right? People change their phone numbers. It happens. It's the steps that happened after that triggered and kind of snowballed into this investigation that we had. So initially, we looked at the phone number change. You know, we cleared the alert until we were able to find additional kind of activity. And then we start seeing that phone number linked to escort services websites and ranging across multiple states, so crossing state lines. And, you know, that kind of grew our suspicion, and we started looking into it. We start asking questions. We look at the front line. And then the front line starts talking, and they're like, oh, well, we've noticed this was going on. We weren't sure exactly what it was, but here's all this elaborate story on our alleged victim that we're discussing.
Knowing what they're looking at, what are you seeing? And you have to alert the frontline staff. Now yes. Start to understand what you're looking at, right?
Yeah. So then we coupled that and we looked at, you know, the transactions, and then you can see a pattern of behavior changes in their transaction activity that, you know, 17, 18-year-old girl is no longer going to the movies and working at a coffee shop. Now we're seeing Cash Apps and Venmos and cash transactions, hotel purchases, Ubers, Uber Eats, all those things, literally a quick shift in activity, and that's out of norm. Then you start looking at it alone to further, and you're seeing, you know, online banking. She's logging into her online banking in Des Moines, Iowa, where we're located, and then 3 hours later, she's in the next city going east towards Chicago. So then we were able to pinpoint the transactions to her online banking. So, and it mirrored, and she was going against the, I would say, one of the largest interstates in the United States, and just moving every other day or every so often through those. And we were able to track her by her internet banking logins and her debit card transactions. And then also to couple that with that situational awareness at the frontline staff, she would come in and make deposits or cash withdrawals. And it's first thing in the morning. You can see that she has bags under her eyes, looks inebriated. There's that physical aspect of change from what we're accustomed to seeing before. But then to top it all off, there's an unknown vehicle that's dropping her off, parking across the street or to the farthest parking spot. So, you know, those are all things that the front line was like, hey, let's pull up camera footage. There's something that's going on here. She's being accompanied by an unknown male. And wow. I think after there's several deposits coming through, maybe that individual got a little bit more comfortable. And then we were able to get a picture of his face and a plate number, and that kind of stemmed into filing SARs, multiple SARs at that. And the bank that I previously worked at, we had a very strong presence in the community. We had great relationships with law enforcement, with nonprofit organizations. We really built that rapport in case we ever needed a resource. We used those resources after several SAR filings and after calling multiple law enforcement jurisdictions. We got that lucky strike in our case, and this was about a year later, maybe even 18 months later, we were notified that there was an arrest, that this individual that we had a plate number on and an image, a facial image, linked back to other victims, and they were able to get an arrest in that case. So from start to finish, when you look at that, everything clicked as it should, and we were able to have a successful outcome of this. And like I said, it's not just the data, it's working with your frontline staff, being situationally aware about your branch and the whereabouts, and so to speak, on all those things. So
yeah, it's amazing results. So it can take a while. You got to pull these threads together. You got to understand what you're looking at and what you're looking for. And when you start to see it, then you got to bring it together. All right. Thanks, Adine. That's a great example. Yeah, Rick, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's something Eden said. It's always surprising to me what information ends up being useful in this kind of work. And so you had a change in phone number for somebody, which you wouldn't necessarily think is always that odd. And I bring it up because I think, you know, we have to be very open to the various ways in which our customers touch the bank and think about how those various interactions can be useful in determining if there's some sort of odd pattern going on. I would never have thought personally until I heard this that the change in phone number would be an indicator. And it turns out it was the primary indicator in the case that you described, which is quite remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to be open. Things are changing all the time, and we've got to be open to what we're seeing and understand them, and understand them in context, as you've been saying. Well, we're sort of coming to the end of our time really here, but I want to thank you, gentlemen, and your teams for all the work you're doing in this space and helping to try and drive out some of these crimes, to detect them, and then ultimately to bring about some changes so that we can prevent them. Just going, I guess, back, I wonder, is any final closing thoughts? Stephen, I go to you first.
Yeah. I think, and this is just another iteration of things I think we need to think about. We are all the experts in human trafficking. I don't think it's enough to sit and make sure you're training your staff, making sure you have models. You need to figure out a way to get in your personal life, in your community, this information to the people out there and make sure you're taking action. I think it's real easy for us to sit, have a nice recording about things we want to do. But I think we need to really start thinking and challenging yourselves as to how do we get this information out to save real people. And I think that'd be my closing thought, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Rick?
I would just say, I think banks need to find a way to, in a safe manner, share more information about how we can find this activity. We have to be careful because we certainly don't want it to fall into the wrong hands.
Right.
But especially for the larger banks where we have more expertise, we can afford more staff to do these things. Is there a way in which we can share our learnings in a meaningful way with other banks, smaller banks in particular, so they can actually enact some rules that can make a difference? Because we squeeze these bad actors out of the financial system if we all are squeezing at the same time.
Yeah.
If just a few banks squeeze, they shift to other banks. So it really needs to be an industry effort. And this is such a pernicious crime that, you know, I think we should all figure out ways to rally around it, as Steve said, and make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thanks, Rick. Hey, Dean, some final thoughts from you?
Yeah, I think my biggest point, and I agree with everything that Rick and Stephen had said here, but for us as a small community bank, it's extremely important to be involved, to build a rapport with, like I said, with local law enforcement, with your Department of Human Services, any nonprofits, all those organizations, because you never know when you're going to need a resource, and rather build that ahead of time as opposed to trying to get everything done last minute. So build that rapport, but I also challenge your vendors, if you're using third-party vendors for your software, challenge them to look into red flags and build, you know, human trafficking type of typologies within their alert-based systems that they use. It's extremely important.
Absolutely. Let's use what we've got. We use the means that we have available to us to make a change in this space. Well, I mean, we hope, obviously, from Red Compass Labs' perspective, we hope the Red Flag Accelerator can be part of enabling some of this collaboration, that can become a way to facilitate some of these conversations for sharing this more widely across the banking community. We need to learn from each other and apply those learnings. Well, thanks very much. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Rick. Thank you, Aideen. Thank you for the teams that work with you and enable you to do the work that you're doing. I think what Stephen said really struck, it's about real people. This is about helping real people in real difficult situations. We've got to work together. I think it's imperative that we make a start. If we're not doing too much in this space yet, we would implore you to make a start, to get involved. And if you'd like to talk more to any of us, I'm sure we'd be delighted to hear from you. But with that, we'll close the conversation for today. Thank you again, gentlemen. Appreciate it very much. And thanks to all those who joined to listen along with our podcast today. Thank you for your time too.
Thank you, Davey, for doing all this work as well from Red Compass's standpoint. I think it makes a big difference.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening to A Few Thoughtful People podcast by Red Compass Labs. If you've enjoyed this discussion, please show your support by following us on your chosen audio platform. We also encourage you to join the discussion on our LinkedIn Red Flag Accelerator page. That's all for this episode. See you next time.